River Talk, the podcast that talks about rivers, gear, advocacy, outdoors, and whatever else comes to mind. Today we are having a co-host, Aaron Babcock from the Siskiyou Mountain Club, who's also a boater. We'll learn a little bit more about him later. And today we have Zach and I hosting. Eric is away with family, so have fun doing that and vacationing. We have not too much news of the week, just a short announcement for Oregon Guides and Outfitters. The Oregon State Marine Board is hosting an open house / call-in session for any guides and outfitters that are interested in learning more or have questions about upcoming legislation, including a new permit system that is replacing the invasive species program. So if you want to attend that, if you're in the area, it's at the Oregon State Marine Board main office, 465 Commercial Street Northeast in Salem, Oregon. Or if you can't attend and you want to call into the conference line is 888-363-4735. And there's a code you have to enter, 531-826. So hope you all call in if you're a guide or outfitter or operator of a business and are interested in learning more and having questions and comments to the Marine Board for upcoming legislation.
Priscilla, I'm going to go next week to this. This is cool. Is this just for guides and outfitters?
Correct. Okay. Yeah. So yeah, a few people asked me to set up this meeting and they were really open to it. They had a few open houses previously this year, all throughout the state, but they were basically like general open houses. So a lot of just general users showed up and not a lot of outfitters. So this is specifically for guides and outfitters and business owners.
And I know the Marine Board, I think we talked about this before, they want to have a fee for boaters. If you're a boater in Oregon, you have to have a fee for any boat longer than 10 feet. This meeting is not about that. This meeting is about outfitter things they want to regulate instead of private boaters.
Yeah, okay. And it's basically open to any questions or comments that outfitters might have for any of their legislative concepts.
Okay.
But yeah, probably the most talked about piece of legislation proposed is replacing the invasive species program with a boater registration program that creates a fund for non-motorized boaters. So it's only for 10 feet and longer. So they're trying to hone in on users that use facilities the most. Granted, it's not going to capture all and some are going to pay that don't necessarily use facilities. But after a lot of Q&A sessions and years of talking to outfitters and users, 10 feet was kind of the length of boat that seemed to use, trailers and weren't necessarily always doing harder whitewater where you can just hike down a trail to a put in or not use a facility. One more piece of background, since we're talking about it, the State Marine Board only runs and operates off of motorized fees currently.
I'm fine with that.
Yeah. So the issue is they have a lot of grants that, come in for non-motorized specific projects. So like say a non-paved trail to a river, like we think of boat ramps as access features. But a lot of groups are interested in developing stair steps or trails or things like what we see on the Clackamas River to help non-motorized use more specifically. So this was their way of answering that request, and we'll see how it does in legislation. But if you're a guide and outfitter or operator, show up to this Q&A. You can learn more about that and other things more specific to guides and outfitters in Oregon.
I want to clarify one more thing. Sorry to keep this running, but it's not replacing the Aquatic Invasive Species tag. It's just encompassing it, right? There's still going to be an Aquatic Invasive Species program. It's just Instead of having multiple permits, they're going to roll them all into one permit that covers a variety of things.
Yeah, that's correct. So there'll still be a dedicated amount of that registration fee that goes to invasive species and can only used for invasive species. And then the other part of that will go into a grant fund to fund education, infrastructure type projects, and access related projects if passed.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Cool. Thanks for the update. I don't have any news, so we're going to go right into our interview with Aaron. And I just want to quickly introduce Aaron Babcock. He is a longtime boater. You've been boating for quite a while, big-time creature crafter, but also a rafter, loves the Corona inflatables, and he's also the head. I don't know the title. Aaron, what's your title at Siskiyou Mountain Club?
I'm the field director.
Field director.
I take care of like the everything out in the field. I don't have to deal. I don't have to deal with the red tape as much.
He's kind of a big deal in the Siskiyou Mountain Club. Let's put it that way. And he's out in the field all the time, clearing trails and coming up with ideas for new trail clearing, and has cleared a lot of trails that matter to me personally in a big way. And I'm super appreciative. And so we're here to talk to him a little bit about his background, but also some of his boating exploits. So welcome, Aaron. Welcome to the show.
Thanks, guys.
Yeah. So first, I just want to know, I mean, I should know things more about you, but I'm going to ask you some basic questions about yourself. Like, where are you from?
Well, I grew up outside of Portland in a little town called Banks, about 25 miles west of Portland. Moved down to Klamath Falls to go to OIT. Didn't really want to move back to the valley because of the rain. Now I love the rain, but I don't like the I don't like the gray lid that comes over in Portland. So yeah, kind of stayed down here, lived in Redding for a little while, then moved back up into Southern Oregon, and now I live in Williams, just a little bit south of Grants Pass.
What got you into boating? Like, was there some thing that triggered you getting into boating?
You know, I like to get out on the water, but I knew nothing about it. You know, I had like a little Sevlar Tahiti kayak thing, you know, and I'd paddle around and probably do some things I probably shouldn't do because I didn't know any better. Actually my stepbrother worked for High Country Expeditions, and he was like, you should just go to guide school. And, you know, so I signed up for one of their like week-long guide schools back in 2011. So actually not that long ago. And just kind of fell in love with boating, bought a raft, just started getting out on the water as much as I could, and just continued as a hobby. I've guided a couple times for, you know, commercial things, but I'm kind of more of an introvert. So, not the easiest thing for me to do, trying to make conversations with people I don't know. So, pretty much just stick with, private boating, but I get out as much as I can, which seems like as I get older and more involved with SMC, it's less and less, but still try to get out there quite a bit.
Yeah, you get out quite a bit. And I want to go back to being an introvert. Some of my favorite guides of all time are introverts. I think, just as an aside, like, so extroverts are really good at talking to the whole group. Introverts, I find, are really good at having meaningful conversations with one or two people. So I wouldn't have it hold you back from guiding. I think you'd be a great guide. You basically guide is your job.
Yeah. So yeah, with friends, though, there's a little less pressure.
Yeah.
You're not getting paid to perform. It's like if you're like, you don't like somebody, you're just like, throw them out of the boat.
Yeah. So how did you go from doing some private boating, having a raft to, and I know back in the day you had a company that, it was Fatwood, right? That you?
Yeah, I sold kindling, basically, yeah. Just like a specialty fire starter thing on the internet. Yeah, I was doing that for a while, boating when I could, and then found out about that Siskiyou Mountain Club that you mentioned earlier.
Yeah, what drove you to go to the Siskiyou Mountain Club? I know the answer to this. I just want you to say it.
Well, I'd been boating for, I don't know, a year or so, and I'd been looking at the Chetco rivers down in southern southwest Oregon. And it's pretty much the only way to get in there to boat the upper sections of it is by a trail. And, due to the Biscuit Fire back in, I think, 2002, the trails kind of just went, you know, kaput as far as like maintenance. There was no maintenance going on. And so it was like crawling basically on your hands and knees through brush, and that's literally for like miles to get down to the Chetco. So I was looking at a way to get down there, and I stumbled upon this organization called the Siskiyou Mountain Club, basically signed up for one of their volunteer trips. They were doing, you know, a few every year, not a ton. They didn't have like a full-time like trail crew at that point. It was just purely volunteers, and yeah, went in there. Actually, I worked with Uzak once too, I think maybe a year later, trying to get down the Slide Creek route. But yeah, I really just wanted to get, honestly, I wanted to get a raft, and I still haven't done that, a raft down to the Chetco. I realize it's quite the endeavor to hike a raft down that trail. It is open. So that may or may not ever happen. But yeah, so it was basically boating that got me into the Siskiyou Mountain Club and access into these wilderness areas.
And we haven't talked about the Chutko in a while. I know you inflatable kayaked it in a Cronin a year ago or 2 years ago.
Yeah, a couple of years. It's like May, a couple of years ago, I think a year and a half ago.
And so, I know you and I talked a bit about in the past about rafting it. I think it's maybe not possible because of those narrow channels. What do you think now that you've done it?
I think that when we went down, I mean, it wasn't super high. It wasn't low. It was like, I think 1900, I think maybe it was around 2000 CFS. So it definitely wasn't high enough for a raft at that point. But honestly, like a little bit more, I was thinking even like 3000 or something. Like, sure, you might have to like portage a couple times, but I mean, you look at like places like the Middle Feather or something. And I mean, there's ones that in a raft, like, you know, you might portage, you know, there's definitely one that most people portage. It's pretty, you know, it's a pretty heinous portage. So honestly, I don't think it would be that difficult. The most difficult part, I think, would just be actually hiking the boat down.
Yeah.
Cause you can't use wheels in the wilderness. So it's like carrying, you know, even a light raft down. I mean, a light raft is what, like 100 pounds.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then you got your gear, you know, paddles and all your personal gear. Plus, you know, you're going to have overnight gear.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not Dan McCain, you know.
Not going to hike into the Middle Kings.
Yeah. No.
I wonder if you could hire Dan McCain. I wonder if he could provide a service hiking rafts into places.
Yeah, I don't think he'd do that. But what I have heard about some people, I can't remember who told me this, but they talked about hiking. Maybe it was just hiking out of the Crooked, which isn't very long, but it's pretty steep, is they took apart the raft essentially. So they took out all the thwarts and stuff and gave that to one guy. And then you'd have, you know, one strong guy carry the bulk of the raft. And
dude,
I think they were doing like a 12-foot raft or something, which would be pretty great for the Chutko, I think. And you just get the lightest raft and then get, you know, if you're R3ing it, give someone all the kind of overnight gear, give someone the thwarts and whatever else you can divide up and switch off carrying the big raft. It'd still be pretty tough, but I think
it would be an endeavor. But now that Slide Creek is open, thanks to some fire activity down there, it's
a
little bit more doable because you could take a wheeled cart up to the top of Chutko Pass.
Oh, yeah.
It would be about a 4.5 mile downhill, basically road walk.
That wouldn't be bad.
Know? And so you could, I was almost thinking like rolling it like long ways with a big long like stick, you know, cut down like find a log or something and roll it in that log and carry it on your shoulders.
Nice.
I don't know.
We used to do that in California.
It would be painful no matter what.
If you put paddles in the middle even, or sometimes if there's oars, you put those in the middle, roll it long ways and then have two people carry it. It's not terrible. But for one person, it's tough. It's a lot of weight.
Yeah. Yeah, my knees, I don't know. You get older. I don't even know if it's worth it, but someday maybe.
It's probably never been rafted, so you could do the first raft ascent if that's like a thing you want to check off.
Yeah, I don't know.
You could also prove me wrong, because I've multiple times said it's unraftable. So it's
to prove me wrong. Well, it's definitely raftable. I scouted a lot of those at like 6,000 just by like hiking down those cliffs and looking at them. And then it's like pretty beefy and pretty continuous. But I'm thinking like between 3 and 6 might be good. Just that one gorge, really. It's just like that first, like from Slide Creek down to Taggart's Bar is like the only one where it would be really continuous and like at higher flows.
That's the part that scares me. It's just things are so back to back in there. If you had any problem, you could have a pretty bad swim.
Yeah. So we'll see.
Well, I hope you get to do it. I think that'd be a really fun trip, especially continuing down through like Conehead and Candy Cane, seeing the rapids at Big Water. I was just like, wow, I've never seen anything that's like true Big Water like that, that's doable in Oregon. I know there is that, but I'd just never seen it until this year. And I was like, holy smokes, this is awesome.
Yeah. The Chutko is, I mean, it's a pretty awesome drainage. I've spent a lot of time down there, both on the trail and some in boats. Wish it was more on boats.
So I'm kind of interested in trail work in the Chutko area. So I'm familiar with wilderness area rules, but I know some of our listeners might not be. So if you could tell us a little bit about some of the challenges of trail work in a wilderness area, I think that'd be interesting to kind of start off.
Yeah, sure. You know, a lot of people, including myself, when I first started working with SMC, you know, I didn't realize that you couldn't use chainsaws. I thought, okay, well, you're not supposed to bring like motorcycles and cars in the wilderness. But I thought, oh, you're opening a trail like a chainsaw seems like, oh, the government will just be able to take one in. But
yeah.
It turns out, yeah, no chainsaws, no motorized anything. Like I said, no wheels. And so when you're doing trail work in the wilderness, you're using, you know, basically the old tools like the crosscut saws that you see hanging up in like barns or like some restaurants, you know, just like those old, like they call them misery whips. They're actually they work exceptionally well. I mean, obviously they're not as fast as a chainsaw. But there's a technique to using them. And once you get good at it, you can actually clear quite a few logs with those. But, yeah, we're restricted to that. Hand saws, clippers, hand tools, like, a Pulaski, which is like a axe with a hoe on the one end. Mm-hmm. There's a bunch of different like treading, we call them treading tools, where you're rebuilding the actual like part of the trail that's on the ground. Yeah, and then of course we're backpacking all our stuff in too. We find that a lot of these remote areas, especially in the Calmeopsis, it's hard enough just hiking in there. So we try to do quite long hitches. Now with our trail crews, we're generally on 10 days on, 4 days off. Just because it takes, you know, maybe a full day just to get into where we're working.
Mm-hmm.
So they've got to carry all of their food and, you know, their, you know, camping gear, plus all the tools and stuff. And you can use horses and mules, which I think other places use quite a bit. We've used them from time to time, but we've found that, you know, it's really rough terrain out there, and it just almost becomes more of a pain than just mm-hmm. trying to pack light, you know, just using light, bringing light food. You know, we don't need to bring fresh fruit and, I mean, that'd be great. That'd be awesome. But, yeah, so.
Nice. How long, you know, obviously it changes from trail to trail and the condition of the trail, but how long does it take to, say, restore, like, a half a mile of trail in that area?
Yeah. I mean, like you kind of stated it, I mean, it does vary a lot. Like, I mean, some days we'll go 2 or 3, 4 miles in a day if it's just like kind of routine maintenance, like what you'd see on a lot of trails that maybe most people would probably be hiking.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of the trails that we've been working on, especially in the Calmeopsis and other wilderness areas in Southern Oregon, they've just been neglected for so long that it's like literally like brush, just, you know, 10, 15 feet high, you know, just like crawling around in there, you know, and you have to use hand saws to cut it out. And then the bench, you know, especially after these fires, the actual trail itself on the ground has been covered by landslides. So you're having to redig that out. And I mean, we've had days where we might only get 400, 500, maybe 600 feet with like a 5-6 person crew.
Wow.
So, you know, it really varies. But I'd say, yeah, it's hard to give you like an exact.
Yeah, no, that's fair. I mean, knowing that it takes like a full day sometimes for 500 feet is a good scale of things, especially like in Southern Oregon. I think it's you guys that has been working on the Taylor Creek Trail, or maybe it's another organization. But
that's another one.
Okay. Yeah.
But I have been out there to look at it.
Yeah, and it looked really, really difficult just because it's so steep and there's lots of landslides. And I was like, wow, I wonder how long it's going to... I'm always impressed with trail work and trail building and what people are able to actually accomplish with a good team. So, yeah, it's awesome.
It's amazing to see. I mean, now, especially after the fires have gone through, you see some of the historic stuff that people have done, you know, some of those mining ditches, and then even just the trails that they cut into the cliffs, you know, and they didn't have equipment in there either.
It's crazy. Yeah.
I was like, why did they even build this? Like, there was some gold, or maybe who knows what they're thinking about the work that they've been
able to
do. You know, and a lot of these historic trails we've found that haven't been maintained for maybe 50, 60 years are still kind of there. And it's pretty amazing that they have survived that long. They did a really good job back in the day. So,
yeah, that's awesome. So moving on a little bit, so the, for folks that don't know, the Klondike fire was a fire that happened this past year and pretty much covered the entire Illinois drainage and Silver drainage, the Silver Creek, which is a tributary to the Illinois. And so I know you've done a little bit of surveying up there, and most people know the Illinois River is a super popular kayaking, rafting, creature craft run in the spring. Could you give us a little update on what it looks like in there? And do you think that there's going to be any conditions that boaters should be aware of when they're getting into the Illinois?
Yeah, sure. I did hike a little bit. I'd say only about 4 miles of it, about a month ago. And it was definitely, it burned really hot in certain areas where there's like the brush is just totally gone and it's just bare dirt. You know, the biscuit had burned through there too before. So there were already some snags, but the snags were weakened. Mm-hmm. And so there was definitely, looks like a lot of potential for falling trees. The brush was, you know, some places it burned where the trees survived and the brush just kind of like got killed, which is probably healthy for the forest. And some places it got really hot.
Yeah.
So as far as the river goes, you know, I've been meaning to go down the Illinois. I'm sure somebody has by now. But it hasn't really had a huge flush yet.
Mm-hmm.
So I would assume that there's the potential in some rapids for, you know, wood to be falling. I mean, especially if we have some more high wind events or like any big rain events that are going to weaken some of those snags. So I would be cautious.
Yeah.
Like Little Green Wall or Submarine Hole or some of those ones that have those constricting points.
Yeah.
And those are hard to scout too. It's not something you typically pull over and scout. You just kind of go for it.
Yeah. Cause you're just assuming like, oh yeah, it's fine. But you know, you never know. And it hadn't burned. Like the Checo Bar fire burned a little bit. That was the one the year before. It burned a little bit of the Illinois, but not that much. And this Klondike fire burned from almost from 199 all the way down to the confluence of the Rogue. So, I mean, that whole drainage got hit pretty hard. And some of it, I know in the Silver Creek area, it burned pretty hot, but I haven't seen the Silver Creek drainage yet. Yeah. We're going to be in there. As far as the trails go, SMCs, we've already worked with working with the Forest Service, getting some basically bear funds to kind of stabilize the trails that burned in the Klondike fire. So we'll be working out there. The Illinois River Trail will be reopened this spring, summer. Everything in the Silver Creek drainage. And there is another, I think it's SOTA, I'm not sure, I might be wrong. There's another trail organization, and they're the ones I think working on the Taylor.
Oh, they are, yeah. Southern Oregon
Trail Alliance.
Yeah, that's who it was. Yep. Cool. Well, I think a few people, including myself, would be really interested once you all start the trail work up there, especially in the Silver Creek area, just to see kind of what the conditions are. And you know, Silver Creek's one that you wouldn't necessarily, well, the upper reaches isn't a section you'd really want to drop into without knowing, like, if there's just logs across the river beforehand. So it'd be pretty interesting for a number of reasons to see the condition. And hopefully, you know, it's not great that it burned hot, but if it burned hot enough, then maybe some of the wood's going to be in this condition
and burn it all
and flush out really easy, but we'll see. So
yeah, I think that's going to be something to just watch out for. And all of those, even the Checo still, cause I mean, the Checo bar fire is pretty recent and, but if we get some good, we get some good flushes, we get some really good rain events and hopefully that'll clean it up.
Yeah.
And the Checo was clean to wood last June. After the Checo Bar fire. So I'm pretty hopeful that, I mean, the rivers, the Kamiops it's not heavily wooded and there's not tons and tons and tons of trees like other forests we think of. And so when it burns, it doesn't typically put a lot of logs in the river.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, and that drainage gets so high numbers of times every year. So I think I have a good amount of hope that just because looking at the gauge year after year and it getting so incredibly high every year at some point in the spring, that it's going to hopefully flush out most of that stuff. But then, of course, you know, you have to worry about bank stabilization and landslides that have their own contributions to changing the river when you get those high water events after a fire. But I think in terms of wood, there's probably a high chance that a lot of that stuff will eventually flush out. We'll just have to keep an eye on other contributions to, you know, erosion and landslides and those sorts of things as we go on throughout the year.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think I really want to talk about boating now, but before we do, like, this is actually the thing I'm excited about the most. But I want to just give a quick plug for the Siskiyou Mountain Club and have Aaron talk about it for a second. And I just want to thank you, Aaron, for so much work you've done to not only clear trails, but to help grow the Siskiyou Mountain Club. And it's a huge organization now that keeps our trails in Southern Oregon open. And the only reason we can go to the CHETCO is because of your work. And so I'm very appreciative of the organization. And I just would encourage people to consider joining as a member, whether it's like $20 a year or $500 a year or whatever. But Aaron, do you want to just tell us a quick overview of what the Siskiyou Mountain Club does before we move on?
Yeah, sure. Well, we're a nonprofit. We basically have developed from just a purely volunteer organization to now having some paid crews. We also do what we call an intern crew, where we hire like college age students. I call them kids, you know, but we hire them for the summer. And they're kind of our like big workforce to open up these trails. They work 10 days on, 4 days off. We've got some other paid crews that are another seasonal crew that we work April through October. We basically work most of the wilderness trails, and almost all of them in the Kalmiopsis, the Siskiyou Wilderness down. We've worked in the Marble Wilderness, Marble Mountains, over into the Sky Lakes and the Wild Rogue. Once we take on some of these trails, a lot of these trails that we're working on are just like so gone that you really can't hike them. Like, you might as well just hike, you know, down the drainage. Once we take over these trails or like clean them up and restore them, we make a commitment to keep coming back to that. So we're not in the business of just opening up a trail and then leaving and letting it go away again. So right now we've got over 300 miles of trail, wilderness trails that we manage and maintain, hopefully every year, but you know, sometimes it's like every 2 years that we'll get in there, and clean them up. So, it's grown a lot. Gabe Howe is actually the founder of it. He founded it. It was his idea, and he's been like the big person, the stubborn person that just doesn't take no for an answer and is like, you know, making it happen. And I was the one with the maybe more of the forestry like skill set to figure out how to get his idea done. But between the two of us, and now with other people that have come in later, we've really turned this into a pretty successful organization that we're both pretty proud of, and we hope that we can continue keeping to do this. If anybody is interested in like coming out and volunteering with us, we're always like doing volunteer trips. Our website, we post everything, is SiskiyouMountainClub.org, and maybe Zach can post that on the page.
Absolutely.
But you know, and our basic membership is just like $25 a year, you know, and it goes up from there. And you can always go onto our website and check out trail conditions and stuff. You don't have to be a member, but you know, if you start using our trails, they're not really our trails, but the public's trails that we maintain, you know, we of course ask for some support if you can. And we understand that some people can't, but you know, if you can, that'd be awesome. So.
Yeah. You guys are doing impressive work, and Gabe has been a force, and because of his personality has grown this organization to be a big deal that I'm again really appreciative of. So thank you so much.
Yeah.
Let's talk about boating some more. Let's get back into boating. I think from we left off at the CHETCO, where did you go from there in terms of your boating? Like you hiked trail or worked on trails into the CHETCO. Where were some of your next exploits?
Exploits as far as like what, like getting trails open into things or just like
boating
where
exploits.
Have I gone? You know, I mean, I haven't been trying being stuck in the Calmeopsis area, although there's still some areas I'd like to explore. But, you know, I've traveled some. You know, I went down to South America for a while, you know, got into those creature crafts that everybody hates, which opened up some opportunities for me to see some rivers that
I
probably
wouldn't have. Hates them.
Well,
we can get into that later.
I say that a little sarcastically, okay. But yeah, no, I've, you know, gone down to South America, basically most of the West. I haven't done too much in the Sierras. I think the farthest south I've gone is like the middle feather, you know, down there, Idaho, Oregon, Washington. I'm kind of more northwest boating, just because it's like, I just want to go boating and I hate the driving.
Yeah.
So it's like, there's so many opportunities in the northwest to boat, so, and there's so many rivers that I still have yet to do that.
What got you into creature crafting?
You know, it was just by chance that I was on the Smith and I was, down there for a few days. We were trying a boat. I had, you know, my 14-foot raft with just a friend and we were just R2ing and it was just super high. Like we did like below Oregon Whole Gorge down to like 101, you know, the class one section. And even that, I was like, this is kind of scary. Like there's logs coming down and it's like, you know, 200 yards wide. And it's like, we don't, you know, I was like, this is stupid. So we're driving back up and driving past the put in for Oregon Whole Gorge. And, I saw all those like creature crafts and I was like, oh, sweet. I've always wanted to see one of these. So I just stopped and I already had my dry suit on and I was like, hey, when are you guys going? Like, I just want to watch you guys go down. And they're like, oh, do you want to get in one? And I was like, well, I don't know if I want to, like, be in charge of one. But they're like, well, we're going to run one run, and then, you know, you can watch us and then, you know, make your mind up. And if you want to jump in one. And I was like, okay, well, as long as I'm not, like, rowing it, like, I'll paddle for you or something. And ended up doing that, and it was awesome. We ran Oregon Whole at like 60 grand or 50 grand or something. Jeez. I don't think I really knew exactly what I was getting into, but we, you know, I boated with him a few more times. And
who was that you were boating with then?
Actually it was the owner. Darren was down there.
Okay.
Darren Vansel and George Knuckles, and a bunch of other people. And so I didn't know who I was meeting. I just saw the boats. I mean, they're kind of hard to miss.
Yeah.
When you're driving. So I've done that quite a bit. Doesn't replace my rafting. I mean, I love being in the raft and stuff, but it's opened up an opportunity for me to see some bigger water, in a safe manner, where I wouldn't have been able to do that in a raft. So.
I mean, you live in a mecca I would think is a mecca for creature crafting because the Smith and the Illinois both get really, they flash so much and they get really big several times a year that it'd be perfect for creature crafts. Whether it's the Oregon Whole Gorge or the North Fork of the Smith is a tributary that gets big really fast. I think that's an opportunity. Have you gone other places in Oregon with the creature crafts?
In Oregon, I've taken them in some, you know, smaller stuff, you know, I guess, Burnt Ranch, you know, that's in California, at higher levels. One time we actually walked out there cause it just got, it gets a little scary, you know.
You hiked out of Burnt Ranch?
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
It was at like 9 grand. People have run it, you know, Westrek went down at like 10 grand or something in his creature craft and him and Paul got pretty destroyed. I didn't want to do that. So you can hike out pretty easily, but like between number one and two and then just come back when it's lower. Cause it's all like, usually it's either a flush or it's a dam release, you know? So it kind of just tie your boat up.
Is that where you guys hiked out? Was between one and two? There's a trail there.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. We were trying to do an R3 setup and it just wasn't working for us. Yeah. It's hard to do those R3 setups in those boats if you're not all dialed in. Cause it's a technique to flipping it, you know, working with three people. So, it just wasn't a good idea for us to continue. So we stopped, which, you know, that's not a big deal there. And maybe some other places we would have had to keep going like the Illinois or something, but Yeah, so I mean, I've gone over like Idaho, the Milner Mile, Norfolk Payette, those runs over there. I'd love to go up to the gorge with one, but you know, the gorge stuff is, like you have said before, is pretty, it's smaller volume and there's a lot of wood potential, like on the truss, you know, it's like, there's still even like some spots where, you know, I've gone down in a raft and I'm like, oh, that might be a little hard to get under. Yeah. So, you know, especially if you're trying to run it at a higher volume,
yeah,
which I think could be awesome, but I'm just like, well, for me, it's like not really worth the risk. Like, I don't know. Yeah. But anyway,
I think the wind would be fun. I think a high water wind would be really fun, or, you know,
sure,
even the Hood River high water, but there's some, you know, there's a bridge you have to go under too. So that makes it tough.
Yeah. Really, the wood is like the thing that I worry about doing that. It's just like you're in a boat, like even in a raft, it's like, and you're running at high water, it's fast, and you can't always just stop on a dime. And if you're running things without scouting it, which you kind of have to do at certain levels, like in a kayak, sure, maybe you could, but I mean, you know, when things get high and fast and continuous, it's just like you're kind of committed to going. And I don't like to run things blind too often if I can help it.
That's a good trait.
I mean,
survival instinct, maybe.
Running big water blind is insane to me. Like, it just doesn't appeal to me at all. And that's one thing that scares me about creature crafters is a lot of them are doing that. A lot of them are just going in and running stuff without really knowing what's downstream. I think that's part of why they get a bad rap. And back to that conversation we almost had earlier, I don't think creature crafts themselves get a bad rap. Maybe they do. I think there's people that do them, that take them down stuff they probably shouldn't because they feel really safe in them. And then bragging about it afterwards.
It opens up a possibility for somebody to run something really big and survive it, you know? And so that doesn't mean, like you said, that the creature crafts are bad. And I'm not sure what you're going to do about that because, I mean, if you say you took a round boat, you know, a raft or a cat boat, and the person was running some ginormous, like class 5-6, you know, Illinois at 20 grand or something, it's like they would just get destroyed like super quick. Mm-hmm. And they would hopefully survive, but they might not, you know, but people know that and they're just like, yeah, I'm not going to do that. Like, but the creature you're strapped in, and I think that is definitely a benefit to the boat, but it can for sure cause people to get like a false sense of security. And you know, you can go into a big hole in a creature craft and still get really worked, and it's not always pleasant, you know. You know, like Zach, you went down Oregon Hole and you got like flipped once, you know, and that was kind of probably, you know, it's like fun in a way.
If you told me before I was going, you're going to go into the biggest hole, the Oregon Hole, and flip, I think I might have flipped twice, but I flipped, I would have not gone. I'm like, I'm not doing that. And the moment before getting hammered, I was really like, oh man, I do not want this to happen. But when it was happening, it wasn't that bad. I'm like, oh, huh, I'm just getting a little bit. And I came out, and I was pretty proud of myself. And I had that sense of invincibility for sure after that.
And you try it out and you're like, okay, that wasn't so bad. And you know, you check your seatbelt and your straps and you make sure everything's good, you know, but then you get in one of those where it does keep you and you're in there for 30 seconds or a minute or two or 20 minutes, you know? So, I mean, there's, I don't know, I've heard of people like 45 minutes or something stuck in.
Yeah, exactly.
And stuff. And that's, and like after like 10 or for me personally, like after 10 seconds, like, if I'm not doing it on purpose, like I'm not having fun. Like maybe I'm safe, you know, I can like breathe and like there's like ways you can kind of pull yourself in the boat to kind of protect yourself better than just like flailing around, you know? But it's not fun. You're not like, oh yeah, this is great. Cause you're just like spinning around and getting like bounced around.
Yeah.
And to me personally, like that's not the point of using the boats. I use the boats because I want to see a different river at a different level that I wouldn't be able to otherwise. But I want to make clean runs, you know, and there's some runs like on the Illinois, like say at like 7 grand or something that like I've done the run enough that I'm like, comfortable, I'm like, okay, I know this hole is actually kind of fun to play in. And so, sure, you might go in that hole and pull back and, like, try to do a trick or something, kind of like a kayaker, you know, surfing a hole and, like, trying to do a flip or something. And, you know, there is some level of control once you learn how to use the boat. But at a certain point, like, the holes get so big, or you, if you don't have the skill to control the boat, like, you're not going to be in control. And then it's not really fun, and you're just at the mercy of the river, you know, and whether you get out or not.
Yeah.
And you break gear, you know, breaking an oar, or breaking a blade. It's like, oh, there's $200, you know, okay.
Yeah, it's not a sport for people that don't have a ton of money and trucks and trailers. Like,
Yeah.
And a garage.
I'd say it's comparable to having a raft, honestly.
Yeah, yeah.
Because they roll up, obviously, a little bit bigger than a raft. To inflate it fully, you know, with the tops up, sure, it's bigger than a raft. But, I mean, if you leave the tops down inflated, it's about, you know, I have two boats. One's 11 feet long, basically, and the other one's, like, 13 feet long. And that's, like, a smaller and a medium-sized boat.
Yeah.
And then with frames and oars, you know. So it's similar. I'd say it's similar to a raft, but maybe not if you buy them brand new. But I guess if you buy a new, brand new Sotar,
that's all expensive.
It's like, yeah.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, the only difference is I think you kind of have to have a trailer for these. You don't have to, but it would be hard to pump them up from scratch every time. And you generally leave them in a garage instead of rolled up. You know, like if you have a little air 13-foot raft, you can throw it in the back of a Subaru, and then back home you can, you know, toss it in a corner. Well, this is a little bit more.
I have fit some creature crafts in some small cars
before. Right.
Nice.
That's kind of being a dirt bag type.
Well, you do
like,
what you got.
Oh, I went on the back of the, you know, this little, like, I don't know, Honda something. I was able to fit one in the back seat and one on top of the, like, trunk.
Nice.
Yeah, definitely. Trailers are nice. I have a trailer, but I haven't used it for a while. It's like got to have new bearings and stuff. So I kind of go and I try not to go in the creature craft if I'm not going to like use it for the whole day or hopefully like an overnight type thing. Cause it is kind of a pain to just, I mean, yeah, to inflate it and rig it and go through that whole rigmarole.
Yeah, like just doing Oregon Hall Gorge would be kind of frustrating because it's just a mile and a half run, whereas North Fork of the Smith there in Illinois or a Baker Smith trip would be pretty cool.
Yeah, and like you said, if you had a trailer, that makes it definitely easier. You can rig it at home with a, you know, bigger, you know, blower or something and then just pull it down. But, yeah.
So I think I've talked to you before being like, I'd love to try creature craft. I think for the reasons you stated is it's cool. Like I'm not going to go in my kayak or a raft on certain rivers at certain levels cause I don't have the skill set nor do I really want to deal with features that big and scary. I think it'd be cool to see and kind of like feel just, you know, that powerful of a river. You know, like the Smith at higher flows or the Illinois at higher flows. I think the issue that I keep on struggling with that seems more prevalent in social media, and I'll preface this with I get kind of grumpy about a lot of things on social media related to boaters. So there's my little preface. But I feel like a lot of the time, and I follow a lot of creature crafters, there's these social media posts that are just so dude, like, so like I'm man and I'm conquering this river and kind of not really like there's, I don't know. Like, I wish it was more of like, holy crap, this was such a cool place and such a powerful river that I have a lot of respect for. I'm really stoked that I have a tool to like experience this river versus like, you guys suck because you didn't get a full descent of this river. And
I think I know exactly who you're talking about.
It's just like
there's a couple,
there's
like,
multiple people, but there's definitely one I think of that likes.
Yeah, and it's like I mean, like I grew up and guided in the like bro guide culture and contributed to it in my own ways when I was younger and probably still do in ways that I'm not aware of now. But it's just, yeah, I think like having the respect for the river. And I think a lot of that comes from learning how to read water and learning consequences of swimming and like having to like work really hard to be able to navigate a craft. And I'm not saying there's no skill required for a creature craft. Obviously there is. But I think there's something missed if the only thing you've ever done is creature crafting and you've never had river experience except for that. And you just feel like this conqueror of the river. And I think there's a lot of danger to that. And there's also a lot of, like, if you're posting that kind of stuff on social media, you're like, you're reaching people and you're influencing people that maybe aren't boaters that are then having a perception about what boating is in not a positive way. And I guess that's kind of like the essence of what bugs me about what I've seen develop in the culture of creature craft. Mm-hmm. And like saying earlier, like, I don't care about the craft. I think it's a cool, like, innovative thing. And I'd love the opportunity to try one. I think it's just like the bravado, I suppose, or the conquistador approach to river running.
Sure. Yeah, no, I get that too. And it kind of annoys me and I try to just let it go. I think social media is dangerous in that way, that like the people with the loudest voice get the most attention. Yeah. Cause I have met a lot of people that have creature crafts that do respect the water. Or maybe they don't even own them, but they'll use them from time to time and go down, but they're not the ones that are like posting strange selfie videos of themselves eating breakfast. That should tell you. But yeah, I get it. It's it can be kind of annoying, and unfortunately, that's kind of the world we live in. And I think I'm not sure exactly why it seems to revolve around creature craft. It's just like you get certain people that are just really, they're just really into it, and if anybody like criticizes them, they have a hard time like just letting it go. So they just start posting random things, and it really doesn't help the situation at all.
Yeah. But well, I think that comes to ego. There's kayakers that do that too. It's like,
And I've seen some raft videos. Oh, where are these people coming from? But you know, it's, definitely creature craft is, you know, the boating world is small and the creature craft world is even smaller. And, and because of that, like, and because of the certain sections that they're running, like, you know, generally it's like expert kayakers are running certain sections. And then you have these creature crafters running, and depending on how they like, you know, present themselves, like that reflects basically it's like somebody sees that and they're like, oh, all creature crafters must be like this person because it's so small. And, you know, there's definitely that thing, but I don't think that's what, definitely not what Darren thinks the boats are about. And, I don't think he tries to promote that. You don't see him post too much on
social media. No, you really don't.
And there's a lot of other people that don't post too much on social media. Sometimes I get drug into that or post some stuff. Like that.
and not the posting and then, is bad. I am a advocate now that we should be, social media is how we communicate as a world. And so just being like, oh yeah, you shouldn't social media, I don't think is the right answer. I think it's just some of the attitudes they have in social media, which I think is a representation of their attitudes about boating. So, I mean, I'd like to see Darren post more about like positive things about creature crafts, you know, and I'd like to see people who were respect the river more posting. It's just that we aren't like commenting and liking on that stuff. It's the people who are incendiary or not incendiary, maybe the wrong word, but that are saying things that are kind of outside the norm of what boaters do. Those posts get more comments and they spread faster.
Yeah. And I think some people like that. And social media is getting worse and worse as far as like just being able to, I don't know. It just encourages that type of stuff.
Yeah. So. I totally agree. And I think maybe some of my frustration for that, and not, this is no longer really directed at creature crafters, just specifically adventure sports in general, is the clickbaity type stuff and the, like, I don't know, like the more false advertising or really loud speaking type posts are what most people see. And like, you know, a lot of the stuff that like AW works on in terms of access and trying to change perceptions about like safety and allowing people to boat hard stuff on public lands is threatened by people acting in that way and promoting. Cause like you said, it's like, or like Zach said, we're not seeing a lot of information that is getting as much of attention from just like the normal boater that does it safely. It's like some clickbaity post about, you know, creature crafter does this insane thing and almost dies. And it's like, kayaker falls off cliff and barely survives. It's like, well, that's not helping our sport, and that's not going to like make people be stoked about letting us boat on public lands and like, you know, allowing access into private property.
But that's why it's good if more people are on social media. Like there's, you know, I think that we need to have the good people on social media too. So not just the ones that are saying crazy things and doing stupid things, but more people on there that are reasonable and saying reasonable things.
Yeah. Well, I think maybe just people coming to the realization that social media, you know, encourages the like kind of wacko comments.
Yeah.
And just like trying not to read into that and like trying to realize like, oh, there's a lot of like good people out there and they're like doing different things. And maybe it's not the most exciting thing to watch. But you know, you can like it. You can be like, oh yeah, that's cool. Or make a comment or something. And, other than that, though, I don't know. It's like you could go into any politics or religion or any of those things where it's like
same
social
thing.
Media just encourages those like the clicks.
Yeah. Yeah. Polarization versus just what's actually going on that's normal.
But as soon as somebody says something that you disagree with and you comment on that, you're helping spread that thing. So I think that sometimes just looking at articles and being like, that's just stupid. Like, I'm not going to respond to that helps or if you hear somebody say something positive, backing them up with something positive helps spread that. I just wrote a clickbaity article about the 10 biggest whitewater rapids.
Oh yeah.
You guys have probably seen it. And I originally had a title that was like the 10 most notorious rapids according to river guides. And I thought about it. I'm like, you know what? Like if I call them the 10 biggest, I'll get more comments and it will spread faster.
Oh yeah.
And so I wrote a clickbaity title for it, which I shouldn't have done. I know it's not maybe like the most ethical thing in the world. I don't think it's that unethical, hopefully.
Hypocritical Zach.
It's a little, yeah. But by calling it, but it's gotten huge traction. Like
it's gotten a lot of attention.
It's got a lot of attention.
You're like 100 comments deep now. It's like,
yeah,
people are angry. I still comment that on it every once in a while. It's like, oh, what's new on Zach's article?
Yeah. And if I had not, like, I list a Blossom Bar as one of the biggest rapids, which I know is controversial to put it in there. But by simply putting Blossom Bar in that article, it's elicited so many comments that are anti-Blossom Bar that it actually has helped promote the article. So it's in my best interest to mention Blossom Bar and put a clickbaity title because I'll get more attention.
Yeah.
That's how that stuff works.
Well, you just provided a perfect example of why people like flashy titles.
Yeah, it definitely works.
So move on a little bit. So Boat Smith, let's talk about that. I think the first year of this type of festival on the Smith, or relatively new, Aaron, why don't you fill us in on what's going on there and when it is, what's it about, how do you get involved, participate, all those good things.
Sure. Well, it isn't actually the first festival, but we're hoping to keep this as an annual thing. So maybe it'll be the first annual festival. Cause I know, I think somebody, maybe Cade, did one a few years back.
Yeah.
And I've heard that there was something like a long time ago. But I love the Smith. It's kind of one of my, I don't live on the Smith, but it's like one of my local runs, that I go to a lot. And I just thought, you know, having a festival there, you know, there's all these festivals on different rivers promoting, you know, responsible use and just kind of like, you know, trying to help the community out, that the Smith is like kind of overlooked. And a lot of people think that the Smith is like, oh, you have to like have rain, you know, and it has like, it's hard to catch and stuff. But really in the wintertime, I mean, it runs quite often, especially if you're looking at like the main stem runs and not like the North Fork or whatever. But, so basically, I called up my friend Adam, out of he does Redwood Rides. I don't know if you guys have heard of that.
Yeah.
And so I was like, hey, do you want to help, you know, kind of help with this festival I have an idea for. And he was like, yeah, sure. And so we kind of like started talking about it, and we came up with a date of February 15th through the 18th. It's basically President's Day weekend. Talked to the forest and got them to say, yeah, we'll open up one of the campgrounds there, Patrick Creek Campground, right across from that lodge that said Food Booze Snooze.
Yeah.
So there's like actual lodging where we'll have the event if people don't want to camp.
Awesome.
But we basically got the campground just for us. We're going to have some vendors there, you know, some sponsors and stuff. Then we're going to do a race. We're going to do actually two races on Saturday. One of them is going to be for like class 2-3. So it'll be like good for like SUP boarders, IKers. And anybody else that wants to do it, you know, kayakers, rafters or whatever. And that'll be probably about a mile long section of what they call the Mary Adams stretch, which is right off of Highway 199. It's usually like, kind of like either a warm up or kind of just a beginner run. And there'll be like three or four rapids in that section. And then we're going to do another race, later in the afternoon, through Oregon Hole Gorge or Middle Fork Gorge, depending on what you want to call it. And that's just going to be from the put in there, down right below the last rapid in Oregon Hole Gorge, which is Oregon Hole.
Awesome.
So, I mean, it'll be dependent a little bit, obviously, on weather. I mean, if it gets too high, you know, we were thinking of cutting it off around like 10 grand as far as like Oregon Hole for like most people. Although, you know, we're trying to get everybody involved as far as like all different types of boats. I know I've gone to some festivals where it's like more geared towards rafters or more geared towards kayakers, even though everybody's involved. We really want to have it open for everybody. So we're even involving Creature Crafts.
What? How dare you?
Yeah.
I would love to see a Creature Craft.
So, yeah, Darren is going to be there and he'll be, you know, he'll have some boats to demo if people want to take them out.
Awesome.
But, yeah, so we're going to do a race there. We've got some great sponsors that have been donating some raffle prizes. We're raising money for the Gaski Mountain School in Gaski, California, basically for their like outdoor program. They have funding like to kind of teach like in the classroom about outdoors, like water and the forest and stuff. But they have a hard time raising money to get the kids out to like see the river itself, you know, or to go out and hike in the woods. And so that's where the proceeds will go. So we're hoping to get a good turnout for that and, get some money raised for the school. Yeah, we got like a movie night going on. We're also going to do float providing, just kind of like a fun, like big mass float down the North Fork Smith, on Sunday after the races and stuff, just as like a friendly, like no racing, nothing like official.
Nothing official, so but the first one to the end wins.
Well, if you want to get competitive, you can make your own race.
We'll see you down there, Zach. Yeah.
That's a long paddle.
I can just see you guys be like, all right, Zach, ready, start, go. And then I just take off by myself and then you guys have fun all day.
So hopefully we can get some people. I mean, it's been getting a lot more interest than I thought it was going to get at the beginning. So I'm kind of like, oh, wow, I need to like get things going. And obviously now with the government shut down, that's not helping too much.
Yeah.
But I'm sure they'll get that figured out hopefully before mid-February.
River festivals are hot right now. I think people are really into them.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it should be a good event. Yeah, I think it's we're charging. You know, we haven't come up for firm prices. I'm thinking like $25 to race, and that includes like basically your free camping. We'll have like some Boatsmith cups, you know, like those little clean canteen cups. We've got some donations of beer, so it'll, you know, we can't sell the beer, so we're just like, okay, yeah, you race, here you go, you have a cup, you know, you're over 21, here, have some free beer. And Patrick Creek Lodge has been really cooperative. They are allowing us to use their facility for any of the movie stuff. So we don't have to set up like an outdoor movie thing in case, you know, it's the Smith River, it might be raining. Hopefully it'll be raining.
Yeah. And, no, that's and awesome.
They have some lodging available, you know, for people if they don't want to camp. But I'll be camping out.
So. And if I'm remembering, they have, so I grew up in Grants Pass and spent a lot of time at Patrick's Creek, like as a little kid. I think they have a hot tub, so.
they don't have the hot tub anymore,
unfortunately.
Oh, no. Maybe we can find somebody with like a river tub.
We need a truck and a tarp. Copper wire and a fire.
There you go. Yeah. It should be a fun time. It's the first year, so we'll see how it goes. And but we're planning on continuing it each year. So
that's awesome.
Is the Oregon Whole Gorge race, is it head-to-head?
I'm going to see how many people actually want to race, because it seems like a lot of times people just want to go to the festival and they don't really want to race.
Yeah.
And I'm hesitant on having like a super huge mass start when you're talking about like rafts, especially like kayakers, they can spread out a little bit faster, but rafts, it's like, so I'm thinking about doing a mass start, but like keeping it to like five rafts, because Oregon Whole Gorge, like it doesn't, we'd start like right at the put in. And so you've got like half a mile of like some like class three ish.
Yeah.
To maybe verging on three plus rapids to go through before you get to the gorge. And I think that'll kind of help separate.
Yeah.
But yeah, I wouldn't want like 20 rafts starting at the same time with kayaks and IKs and all this. So we're thinking of like doing it by classes and then maybe a size, you know, limitation on, you know, just be like, okay, here's the first five, here's the second five, and separating them by like 5 minutes or something.
Yeah. That'd be nice. Yeah, definitely separate by class, I think.
Yeah.
I was thinking for the upper wind race, we do mass start for rafts and cat boats. Mm-hmm. And I think that you can do more cat boats just because they maneuver a bit better, but it's always, depending on the water level, of course, I always think it's fun to watch like the rapid just above Ramshorn, and there's like three or four rafts just like battling it out. And
I think it's kind of fun. I don't think Oregon Whole Gorge is, you know, any more dangerous than the wind, you know.
Well, of course, like, level dependent, but yeah,
level dependent. So you know, if it's like around $8,000, I mean, that's a beefy level for a raft. And,
I think it'd just be safety. Like if you have,
there's
15 safety kayakers, you could probably have a lot more rafts, but if you only have a couple, then you got to think about how many people can be picked up.
Well, and I mean, as far as safety goes on that, like, especially if it's running at a high level, like basically like in the middle, there's like a small break between hole and the wall and, you know, in the upper like fire nozzle section.
Yeah.
And then there's a really long break before the last rapid, which that one would be kind of fun. Like if you make it through, then it's like this mass paddle hard through the flat water to get to that last rapid. So that
final sprint.
But yeah, we wouldn't want to have like three rafts flip at the top and then like be like, oh yeah, two kayakers and another raft, like pick everybody up, you know?
Yeah.
So, but I don't know. I really like the mass start idea.
Yeah. I think
I'm going to be back down on the, I don't know, 8th or something. And I'm going to try to get some buddies and we're just going to like kind of run it again and just kind of like look at safety options and like how much what's reasonable and like feasible as far as like numbers of people, because the fire nozzle, there's not much you can do. If you flip at the top, like you're doubtful that you're gonna get out until like the bottom of the rapid, like you're going so fast, and it's like, well, you can throw a throw bag at somebody going like 10 miles an hour, like that's not really gonna do anything. So hopefully, and I mean, obviously we'll be kind of vetting people. We'll want everybody that participates in the race to at least have run it before and is comfortable in class 4 or 5 water.
Yeah.
We don't want like people just showing up and being like, oh, I don't never run this before. Let's, you know, cause it is, I mean, there's some like nasty sections on the sides.
It's legit. I think it's a little harder than the wind. I think it's definitely more consequential than the wind because the rapids are stacked back to back and there's some weird, like not civvy. There's a civ or two in there, but it definitely makes me nervous. I would be nervous racing it personally.
I think it depends on level. Cause like the wind at 8 feet when we did year of racing, there's no pools.
Yeah. I'm not going to race the wind to 8 feet either. Like I'm a little, like when I race, it's definitely like two levels below what I would choose to run. Where the wind to 8 feet, I'm just like, ooh, I just to do that period is kind of an exciting day for me.
Yeah. But I think like, if you're talking about like medium to higher level, not high levels on, but you know, class five levels on Oregon Whole Gorge, and you get like all the folks that run Tobin and some of the Northern Cal, Southern Oregon class five boaters, they'd be stoked about that. And I think you'd be able to have some solid safety crews within that group of folks. So I think it just depends on who shows up and what the water levels are.
I think it's pretty selective on who does it. Like I think there's enough safety, and I think people can mess up on the wind a little bit, where if you swim early on an Oregon hole, you could be in for quite a ride. Or, you know, when you're racing and you're head to head, you're bumping on the boats and you're definitely not taking lanes you want to. Where Oregon Hole, some places, there's kind of one place you need to go. There's not multiple. Yeah. Like on Ram's Horn and the wind, every one of those drops has multiple lines. So if you hit somebody, you can go somewhere else, where you're all funneling into Oregon Hole Gorge into somebody the same lines.
You think about it too, though, when you have multiple, if you do a mass start and there is an accident, I mean, if you win the race, like, you're not going to win anything. Like, it's not a, you know, it's like, we're definitely phrasing it like everybody provides safety on this, event. Like, if you're boating on it, like, you need to be, you know, if somebody flips in
look
front
out
of
for
you,
each other,
you know, chase them down, you know, just like say, oh, hi, bye.
Yeah. Of course.
A fun place to do a head to head race would be starting at Patrick Creek on the Smith there, and because there's some like class 3-4 stuff there for a few miles, that would be a fun head-to-head race.
That could be a good one. That one's like really level dependent, though. That's kind of why we were thinking Oregon Hole, just because like you can run it down, you know.
Right.
I mean, we ran it this winter around, I don't know, I think it was below 1,000.
It was really low. Yeah.
In rafts?
In rafts.
Wow.
Actually, even we had some creature crafts down there too, but the rafts were definitely better because you could just low side. But it was tight, you know. But, I mean, you could race at that level, and it was fine.
Yeah.
But preferably, it'll be higher than that. We'll see.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it'll be awesome. Like, I remember doing a mass start on Canyon Creek, Washington at, like, I don't know. It was really low. And I thought it was super fun because, like, say if the Smith is really low, you could do a mass start, and some of the, like, skill is knocking off of rocks in the right way. And I remember racing like Ben Sigler, me and my friend Anna, and like they got stuck on a rock and we kind of bounced off it in a better way, and like we beat them just because of that. And that was like, yes, that was so fun. Like, it wasn't really like the normal head-to-head, it was like this weird like technical, like giggly, I guess they weren't giggling but we were giggling head-to-head, and it was super fun. So I think either way, like, I think Oregon Hole is going to be a super fun spot for a race, whether you do it mass start or you know, like a minute or part. I think it'll be a good, and it's all highway side. It'll be fun to see like the tourists driving to the coast being like, what the heck is going on?
Yeah. That's almost one of the issues I've been trying to think of is just the actual parking and stuff. So we're going to have like Barefoot Brad, and he's going to try to, you know, get people together to do shuttles. Redwood Rides is like using a couple other vans and trailers, you know, so we're going to try to like provide a free shuttle service like along that, because the parking is
very limited. Yeah.
Even at the like put in there at Middle Fork Gorge, it's like you can't fit like 30 cars in there.
Yeah.
So, hopefully we keep the spectators off of the highway too.
Definitely.
It's our first year. We want to keep everybody safe.
Yeah. Well, I'm really looking forward to it and hoping I can make it down there. And I know a lot of other people are talking about it already. So really excited you're helping put this together, and really hope that all the levels line up and permits line up and it goes down really well.
Yeah. Well, thanks.
Yeah.
And it's a lot of work. Thank you for taking time to do it. It means a lot to a lot of people. So thank you so much.
Yeah, of course.
Cool. Well, what are we? I think we're probably close to an hour, if not over an hour.
We're hour 10.
All right. Well, should we move on to gear of the week?
Yeah.
Zach?
Yeah.
I think you had something you had thought about in advance and were excited to talk about. You want to go first?
Yeah. So I've been thinking more about my personal rafting skills this year and like really working on my own guiding abilities, just as a personal development thing. And on that process, I've ran into these blue water rope slings as flip lines. And I've always been somebody who wears a flip line around their waist, you know, for flipping a raft back over. And I'm trying some new things out. And I found this like little Dyneema sling that Blue Water makes. I'll put a link on the website to it. But it's a little 10-foot runner that you can shove in a small pocket of your life jacket and flip a boat back over. And I'm really becoming a fan of this idea of the clean line principle that I've heard more and more about, where you don't have lines on your body or lines laying around. So I'm excited about it. That's it.
Nice. Yep. Cool.
Nice.
Mine, I'm going to do Sawyer Dynalite oars. I think nine footers or 9.5 footers is what I have that I really like. I've tried guiding. I got the opportunity to try a lot of oars, like really crappy ones to really nice ones, just because I didn't own them and I was guiding. And like, even a lot of people like the counterbalanced oars. I really don't like them, but I may be alone in that.
You're correct. The correct answer is do not use counterbalanced oars.
Okay. All right. They're really weird to me, and I don't like how heavy they are, but I'm also not super strong. So
they're weird, and if you use them, you're wrong.
Yeah. But I really like just the standard Dynalite oars in regular oar locks. They're super light. They're really strong. I hit a lot of rocks with my oars, and I haven't broke them yet. And I think, you know, you pay a lot of money for them, but they also last really, really long. They get a lot of really good purchase on the water, and they're Sawyer, so they're all handmade and really durable, sturdy, and they take care of you. So if you want to spend a bunch of money on oars, I'd highly recommend them.
I want to clarify one thing. Dynalite is the blade.
The blade, correct. Yeah. So it doesn't... The shaft,
oar can be something else.
Yeah. The oar, yeah. Dynalite blades... And not counterbalanced oars, just the regular. Yeah. So
I use those Dynalite blades with the MXG shaft. And
I think that's what I have
too. Best way to go. They're light. They're incredibly stiff. They're as stiff as wood, and we rarely break them. And
yeah,
we use them for our company, and our guides are really good at breaking oars, and but they have a hard time breaking these.
Nice.
So I'll agree with you on that one.
Aaron, do you have any gear that it doesn't have to be water related? It could be like hiking or backpacking or whatever.
Oh, I wasn't prepared for the gear stuff. So,
I know. We usually never are either. So,
I'll have to pass on that one.
Okay. Cool. Zach, anything else?
Nope. That's it. Thanks, Aaron, so much for being here and taking some time to talk to us. It's really interesting to get your thoughts on things and your perspective. So thank you.
Yeah. Thanks so much.
And anytime you want to get on a Creature Crapper solo, just let me know.
Well, maybe Boat Smith. I'd be maybe pretty Boat stoked Smith, about yeah. that. Cool. Yeah. Well, I'll add one last wrap up note. I know we got a few letters in about the inflatable kayak discussion. We are going to get back to that hopefully in this next episode. The reason we didn't this time is we had the opportunity to interview Aaron, and Eric was away with family, and we wanted to include him on that podcast. So those that wrote in about IKs, we read your fan mail, and we loved it, and we're going to talk about it a lot, hopefully in the next episode and maybe even a couple episodes. So hang tight. And we will post information about Boat Smith on the website as well as Siskiyou Mountain Club. So if you're interested in that, check out the website. And I think that's it.
Yep. Cool.
Great.
All right. Well, thanks for tuning in. Hopefully you're on your way to the river or listening to this on your lunch break or on your way to or from work. And hopefully get on the water soon. All right. Take care.